Hey guys, this is A to Z Podcast. I'm Austin.
And I'm Zach.
First up today, let me tell you guys how to find us easily. We're going to be found at A to Z Podcast Spokane.podomatic.com. Now let me spell that out for you guys. A, the number 2, Z, Podcast, Spokane, .podomatic.com. That's A to Z Spokane.podomatic.com. Or for those of you that use iTunes, you can just go ahead and log into your iTunes account, throw A to Z in your search bar, and hit search under the podcast section. Now remember, that's the number 2, not T-O. So that's the main key right there, guys, so make sure you remember that. First up today, we're going to go ahead and touch on some movies for you guys. I recently just saw the movie Django, and so we're going to go ahead and talk about a few trailers that we saw that intrigued Zach and I, and so here we go. First up was the movie Oblivion. Zach and I both saw this trailer in the theaters, and it both intrigued our fancies. What most about this movie coming up, tickled your fancy there, Zach?
Well, I'm not a big Tom Cruise fan. Don't like most of his movies. But it's directed by the same guy that directed Tron Legacy, which was released a few years ago. And the soundtrack's probably the best part of that movie. But, I mean, it's just a good movie just in general. Like, really cool visual aspects of it. And I'll be interested to see his next work. He also kind of co-wrote this movie, so it just looks interesting, post-apocalyptic world, kind of everything's not as it seems, or at least how that's the trailer gets it across. But it looks, good enough to see, so.
Yeah, if I recall, I think Morgan Freeman is also in this movie with Tom Cruise.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's had a brief part in it, so really interesting to see.
Yeah, it looks like a good movie that's coming up. I, too, not a big Tom Cruise fan, but if it's a good movie, it's a good movie, right?
Exactly. It doesn't matter who's in it.
Exactly. So, we also saw the trailer for Lone Ranger. Now what do you think of that?
God. It looks so bad. So bad.
And not even Johnny Depp's going to save it for you?
No, I'm not even a big Johnny. Oh, okay. He's pretty good in some things, but I mean, he's playing like a Native American kind of, like, just.
Wasn't it directed by the same guy that directed the Pirates movie, though, too?
I'm not exactly sure on that. I'll take your word for it if you say it.
Yeah, I think so. I think that because they flashed the pirate emblem.
Yeah.
They flashed that, so I assume. But it does look pretty terrible, I'm not going to lie. But, some people really love their Johnny Depp, so, they might go ahead and see it anyways, but. It just doesn't look like that good of a movie. A little too much CGI, I guess, for me. But then again, I watch Transformers, and that's all CGI. So.
That train wreck
thing
that they had in the commercial just looks.
That's what I'm referring to.
I think it's probably aimed to be made for little kids. So
Yeah, and it's probably good for them. One movie that I'm kind of on the fence about, it has quite the all-star cast, especially with the actors sort of our age, is that movie 43. It kind of has all the cool hip actors from all the movies that we've been seeing lately that's kind of targeted at you and I.
Yeah, it's even got some older, just like more well-known actors like Hugh Jackman's in it, Halle Berry's in it.
Yeah, and Anna Faris is too.
And Johnny Knoxville and Sean Williams. I mean, the list for this movie just goes on and on. I don't know, you can't get anything out of this preview. Like, it just looks like a small clips of YouTube videos, like, smashed together.
Yeah, it's
so totally is there going to be a narrative, like, that drives you all the way through the middle of the movie? Who knows? But, you're right. It's, I don't know.
It looks like a good comedy to me. I mean, my personal favorite, Emma Stone's in it, so that kind of, I guess she has, herpes or the clap or something, and she's talking to the dude at the gas station, and he's like, hey, I'm just watching over this stuff for you, and she's like, he's like, well, why'd you have to give that hobo a blowjob or a handjob or whatever? She's like, he was a wizard. He had magic beans or whatever, you know. It just looked pretty funny. So kind of on the fence, but we'll see about that one. I just kind of, this one just popped up to me. I'm sure a lot of people already knew about it, and you were one of them. You told me to check it out. But that Pacific Rim movie, it's definitely intriguing to me.
Yeah, it, I mean, on the surface, it looks like it could just be like a sequel slash spinoff of Battleship and Transformers, but I think it's going to be way more than that. But the basic premise of it is these giant mech robots fight aliens from another dimension from space, but that they come from the sea. Kind of very convoluted, but it's by Del Toro. There we go. Mm-hmm. You helped me out on that one. And he did Pan's Labyrinth. I mean, I think that won foreign film of at the Oscars a few years ago. And I mean, it's really good, and there's no doubt. I mean, he did those Hellboy movies too, which the first one, I mean, it's a pretty solid movie just from a movie making standpoint. But he was attached to The Hobbit too. He was originally slated to direct that, but it was in pre-production hell forever, so he just gave up on it. But I mean, the internet's abuzz about this movie because of, in the trailer, you hear the voice of GLaDOS, which is the AI in the Portal video games. And now it's been stated that it's the same actress run through the same voice modulation, so it sounds exactly like her. But there's no confirmation that it actually is GLaDOS, other than the director stating how much he loves Valve video games, which is the company that makes Portal.
Well, that'd be cool if it was GLaDOS, you know. I like her unique voice that she has there. What do you think about people comparing it or thinking that it might be the next Star Wars franchise?
I mean, Star Wars is something I hold so close that, you know, like, this movie is just robots fighting aliens. Like, it doesn't seem like there's the depth that you could dig into, like, with a Star Wars or even Star Trek, where it's, like, exploration, and it's they never stop introducing new characters and those kind of things, where it's space, and the scope of this movie just doesn't seem like it would willing to be the next Star Wars. So, you know,
guess we'll have to wait. We have to find out, huh?
To see it. Yeah,
cool.
Other trailers coming out this year are like all the big superhero movies. You know, we got Iron Man 3, Thor 2, the Superman. Star Trek previously mentioned. Everything's coming out this summer, so those are some other ones. But you know,
yes,
you know what to expect from those.
Yeah, keep your eyes open; otherwise, it'll pass you by. All right, so we're getting into the section of our show where we're going to talk about a few movies that we've recently seen. So I'm going to go ahead and drop the spoiler alert. If you guys don't want to hear anything that pertains to The Hobbit or Django, and possibly Zero Dark Thirty, then
I'll try and not ruin Zero Dark Thirty as much, just because it's a lot of people haven't seen it. Just recently came out, and we'll try and steer away from spoilers, but it's going to be a natural talk that we have between it. And if something comes up, just a fair spoiler.
Yeah, just a fair warning. So we don't want to ruin anything if you guys haven't seen these movies, but if you want to keep on listening, go ahead. We're going to first dive into, to The Hobbit. So what'd you think about The Hobbit, Zach?
It was exactly what I expected it to be. I mean, it's a Peter Jackson movie, and I'm a fan of most of anything that he attaches his name to. I hear a lot of people complaining about this movie, saying like that the main villain in it, which is that white orc, isn't in The Hobbit. But you know, you have to remember something, that this movie is one book cut into three movies. So they took a bunch of short stories that Tolkien has written and inserted them along the way to give it breadth, to make it more full, and make it so they can stretch it into three movies. That white orc is probably a short story written by Tolkien, and that they had to insert a villain to carry along the narrative of this first movie. So I have no problem with it.
Sure.
The only problem I do have with it is that he was all CGI. And I do love that the orcs in the Fellowship, Two Towers, and Return of the King are mostly makeup and costume designed, and it makes them more real. But I'm sure Peter Jackson had a costume made up for this guy, and it just didn't work. So, you know, he just scrapped it and went with CGI.
Yeah, I can see how people, you know, are a little hesitant because they go in and expecting The Hobbit, and they come out, and they did see The Hobbit, but they also saw a bunch of other stuff, and to them, they're like, well, you're ruining the movie, or you're just adding stuff that doesn't need to be there, and that might be true, but at the same time, you're getting a lot more bang for your buck, almost. You're getting way more J.R.R. Tolkien than you would otherwise.
Exactly.
For me, though, the most important thing was pretty much who they got to play Bilbo and the dwarves and stuff, and I think they got that right for the most part. I mean, I thought Bilbo did a fantastic job. It was great. Yeah. I think he was better than Elijah Wood was playing Frodo, personally.
Yeah, I may disagree with you there. I thought they were just different characters, so like he's way more enjoyable as a character to ride along with, and Frodo gets kind of dark there, but that's a whole nother thing. Now, I think that The Hobbit kind of suffers the same thing from that the book does, is that there's just too many characters, and it's so hard to keep them all straight. But, you know, that's something as you come along, and the other two movies that are going to be associated with this get released, that you'll maybe, you know, well, spoiler alert in the book, some of them do die, you know, if you haven't read that. But, you know, I was completely entertained. Another small complaint I have about it, though, is from a technical aspect, they shot this movie at a new frame rate, and it was specifically designed for the 3D aspect of it. And I saw this with you, and we didn't see it in 3D. The theater we saw it in, I don't even think they know what 3D is, but so, you know, some of the images and the outlying not in the center of the screen kind of stuttered back and forth a little bit. But I mean, that's a real small issue that I had with the film, and it's something that when they're released on Blu-ray and your home viewing will be completely ironed out. So it's a small thing.
Yeah, it's not the end of the world there for sure. What do you think about the huge gap in between them releasing movies where, you know, in Harry Potter, they released one during the winter and then one during the summer, I think it was.
Yeah, last Harry Potter movies.
It's like 6 months
yeah,
apart, but The Hobbit, yeah, they're doing a year apart for each, so you're going to end up waiting or, you know, going through three years.
Well, they did the Fellowship, and then they waited a year, and it was like every winter they did it. And it is kind of a different change, but I think that they have to do that to do all the post-production CGI in it. Who knows? You know, it's tough, but I mean, you have to give The Hobbit one thing. It was absolutely a beautiful movie. The slow shots of like the mountains and everything definitely makes you want to move to New Zealand.
For sure, you know, I already kind of wanted to anyways, but after seeing the Lord of the Rings movies and The Hobbit, it just reconfirms that it's definitely a beautiful place, and, you know, definitely a place we should visit sometime, you and I.
Yeah, good luck with that. They have really strict tourist laws there, I've read.
We can just tell them we're making a snowboarding film. We're making the next That's It, That's All. So moving on, we're going to go ahead and kind of get into Django, since it's pretty fresh in both of our minds, especially in mine, because I just saw it today, as a matter of fact. So what did you think of the movie just as a whole?
I really liked it. I thought it was, I don't know if it's as good as Inglourious Basterds, but that's just because I've seen it once and I've seen Inglourious Basterds many, many times. Did you find that you liked the characters as much as Inglourious Basterds?
I found that I enjoyed Jamie Foxx's character. I thought he was pretty cool, you know. I really enjoyed Christoph Waltz's part. I think he picked right up where he left off in Inglourious Basterds, more or less. I mean, I know it's not the same movie and they have nothing to do with each other, but I think his performance in both were amazing, so he definitely was my favorite. I think it was just good. I think after I watched this movie a bunch of times, as I have with Inglourious Basterds, I'll like it almost the same, maybe a little less. I think Brad Pitt's part in Inglourious Basterds put it over the top for me, but at the same time, Leo did an amazing job in this movie too. So
yeah, and who knows, maybe after you watch this movie a few more times, because like I keep thinking back and all my favorite scenes were probably interactions between Leonardo DiCaprio Christoph Waltz and Jamie Foxx. Now, see, I wasn't as big of a fan as Jamie Foxx in this role. But, you know, like, it was definitely good. I'm not trying to take away anything from it. I thought other parts of this movie were stronger than he was, you know. He by no means carried this film, while Christoph Waltz at certain points definitely did. I mean, if you say anything about Tarantino, the greatest thing that he's ever given us is this actor, Christoph Waltz, you know.
Sure. And I don't know if it was really Jamie Foxx's job to carry the film. I feel like Quentin Tarantino did put it more on Waltz's shoulders, just because maybe he is the superior actor, or I don't know, maybe it's just that me and you enjoy him more between him and Jamie Foxx. I just think he is one of the better actors that's out there acting today.
Oh, absolutely. Side thing that I just remembered, do you remember the scene where it's like the big confrontation where they take all the, we're at Calvin Candy's ranch and they're having dinner, right? And they kind of figure it all out, and then they come in and rush. You remember when he, like, pounds his hands on the table, and he cuts his hands, and it starts bleeding? Yeah. Do you remember that? That actually happened. Like, that wasn't part of the thing. When Leonardo DiCaprio slammed his hands down, he actually cut his hands on a piece of broken glass, and he just kept going, you know? So that's kind of, like, a cool little...
Well, it turned out really well, because, you know, his hand's bleeding, and then he rubs it on Jamie Foxx's love interest's face, you know, and... Mm-hmm. Since that was improv, that was really well done. That is even more impressive to me now.
Yeah, because, you know? I mean, that must have hurt like a son of a bitch.
Yeah, he was bleeding. It was all gushing down his arm and stuff. The movie for me was definitely really enjoyable, though. I mean, I just think back to the part where Jonah Hill was one of the
the bag scene. The bag scene.
Yeah, it's just... you know, they're there and they're putting the bags on their head and they're criticizing the one guy's wife's handiwork and stuff. And it's just, you know, stuff like that. It's the small stuff that doesn't make the movie as a whole important, but it just, you know, warms your heart. It brings a smile to your face.
It's the thing that Tarantino does best are those little scenes, you know, between, I mean, they add nothing to the larger plot. But, I mean, that bag scene in there honestly makes you laugh. And it's, like, that movie, like, the parts where the guy's getting torn apart by the dogs or the Mandingo fight scene, they're so, so brutal that I think you have to take, like, a deep breath and add some comedy in there. Or else, it's kind of like a palate cleanser. Or else you're just going to be, like, beaten over the head.
Yeah, for sure.
Like...
Because it was really intense. The Mandingo fighting was definitely, you know... I have a lot of black family members, and so, you know, for me, it's definitely a little hard watching stuff like that, because I can kind of, you know, see my family and stuff in that sort of a position, or, you know, it just really comes sort of full circle almost, I guess. I don't know. It's definitely tough to watch, so you do need that comedy, which another part I thought was awesome was when they first team up and they're picking out clothes, and he tries on, you know, that, like, orange tall cap, and he goes, no, that's not the one. And then they keep talking. He's like, you can pick out anything you want to wear. And he's like, anything.
And he comes out,
and it cuts
and
to
it's
the
just
next
like...
scene, and he's in his blue, like, pimp suit with the frilled collars, and it's literally electric blue. It's just glistens in the sun as they're riding up to that, that plantation in Tennessee.
I think that guy's name's
Big Daddy,
Daddy or something
yeah,
like
Big
that.
Big Daddy. Exactly.
Played by Don Johnson, who was a big star in the 80s and hilarious in this movie. He played like Colonel Sanders, basically.
Exactly. It was just awesome. He didn't know anything, so he'd always look to that slave girl. He's like, what's that boy's name down in town? Oh, yeah, Todd. Treat him like Todd. Because they couldn't figure out, since Django's character was technically a free slave, the other slaves at this plantation didn't know how to treat him. They didn't know if they should treat him like he was a white man or if he was another slave. And so it was just, that part was definitely a comical story lifter there.
Oh, definitely. It's just... It's everything that I come to expect from Tarantino movies, but Have you heard some of the criticism about this movie, especially like a director like Spike Lee, who's a very famous black director, claiming that this movie's racist?
Really? I can see how people might think that it's racist, but for me, it's not. I don't think it's racist. I mean, what was Spike Lee's bone to pick?
Well, I think that he's just more jealous that he couldn't make this movie, you know?
That's true.
Because, like, it's, you know, and, you know, like, now I don't want my comments to be taken out of, I think it is a racist movie, but not from, like, portraying negatively. It just shows what racism, like,
yeah.
I think it's a pretty accurate depiction of how things were, as best as we can tell, you know.
It was racism, and it is racist, and it's just part of the history. Like, that's how stuff was back then, you know, and it's just people trying to sweep it under the rug, being politically correct, you know, I guess. And it was, but it's not like Quentin Tarantino was like, I'm gonna put the black man down with this movie, you know.
No. Not what he was and it's after. Definitely, I mean, even to the way that the movie ends, it's all about empowerment, you know, like,
yeah, I mean, the horse is like breakdancing at the end. That's another pretty funny part, but it is, it's, I mean, it's all about empowering the guy underneath, you know? I mean,
yeah. And it's, you know, it's just a solid movie, but, you know, because it's theatrical, I don't think I've ever seen a movie in a theater more than once. It's just, it's, you know, so like when it comes out and it's on HBO 1,000 times and I'm, you know, reading on my iPhone or something, it'll definitely be on in the background. But I mean, it's just got a lot of awesome scenes that I'm just recalling as we're talking about it, you know?
Yeah, there's...
I thought Samuel L. Jackson's performance in it was awesome, too.
Yeah, it was, for sure. His was, you know, another movie maker. I think it just kind of pushes it up over the top. From being just an average movie to a really good one is because of acting jobs like what he did. I mean, it was just good all around. And I think when you get great actors all together, you know, like Leo and Samuel and just everybody kind of gets on the same page and they know what they want. And then you have a great director in Tarantino and he just gets the most out of them.
Exactly. I like, you see some movies that aren't well directed and not from like how they're shot, but let's bring up like an actor like Mark Wahlberg, who, it all depends on the director. Like, you watch something like, I don't know, I'll even say Ted. That's like I think the last Mark Wahlberg movie I watched, and he's really funny in it. And I think with a strong director, you can draw a lot of out of Mark Wahlberg. But then you watch something like The Happening or any of his million cop dramas that he does. They're just not good because they're not done with strong directors. Sure. And he's just average. So I think a good director like Tarantino, when he gets his hands on great actors, he can draw something extra out of them. Because, I mean, there's even articles in there about Leo having a really hard time with this movie because how incredibly racist his character is. And, you know, it's just Tarantino draws everything out of him.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I mean, because Leo's character is definitely over the top, but, you know, it's just a movie and... You know, he did a spectacular job.
Any other thoughts on it before we move on?
Nothing really. Definitely, I'd say a must see if you don't catch it in theaters. Definitely Redbox it, buy it off of your home cable provider, anything like that. I would definitely watch it. I guess one thing, I do appreciate that Tarantino sticks to what he knows. He knows what he does well, and that's kind of where he stays. He sort of changes up the storyline or where he's at, but it's more or less the same movie, so I can always expect something going in, and I always end up being happy and satisfied. Yeah. So
I do want to bring up one scene that was kind of bad in there, and that's the scene that he's actually in. Now, I've heard and I've read some about this specific scene. He plays the Australian slavers, I guess. Yeah, they're kind of moving Django. Slave transports, kind of at the end of the movie. And I've heard that it started out, because their accents are really weird in that part, It started out at the beginning of the scene, they were going to do Southern accents, but that Quentin Tarantino can't do a Southern accent, so that they switched to Australian.
I was wondering about that. I was like, it was kind of random that they were just all of a sudden Australian dudes.
Yeah.
Going around and moving slaves.
That's the popular theory, is that he just can't do a Southern accent very well. And since he forcibly injects himself into his movies, which I don't really care, because, like, he's in Pulp Fiction and he's in a lot of his own movies. But, you know, he just kind of, yeah.
Yeah,
it
wasn't a deal breaker. I thought it was a good scene. I mean,
yeah. It was just a small part. Movie, I just wanted to bring it up.
So, Zach, what'd you think about Zero Dark Thirty?
Yeah, I just saw this a couple days ago. I'll talk about it a little bit, you know, because a lot of people haven't seen it, and you haven't seen it, so I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but, from the opening scene to the end, I felt like I was having a panic attack watching this movie. Just so, so, so intense, and just from the trailers, they kind of make it seem like it might be just a war movie, but it's much, much different than what I expected. It's more about, like, the people behind the scenes and the CIA operatives, and you follow one person's as they enter Pakistan and the Middle East, and kind of go through realizing how messed up things are. And it's just so intense. I felt like I mean, for lack of a better term, like, had been there. But I think any great director will do that, you know, can make you feel like you've gone through something. And it was just, I mean, I love Django, but if you want to look at it from, like, a film's critic's perspective, I think Zero Dark Thirty was without a doubt a better film from start to finish. But I necessarily would never really want to watch this movie ever again. I would much rather watch Django, but if I look at it through, like, a critical eye, Zero Dark Thirty is, I mean,
is it worth one of the better movies of the year. Or wait till it comes out, or what would you
advise? I'll just be completely honest. There's a lot of torture in this movie, and if that's not something you can really stomach, then you'll probably never see it. But I would say go see it in the theaters. But
gotcha, Will. You know, it might not be everybody's cup of tea, and that's a lot like Django, but you know, if it interests you, I'm sure you'll go see it. If not, yeah. Zach here says it's still worth a watch, so you might just have to sit down and watch it anyways.
Yeah. A lot of people are, like, saying how not accurate it is, but I honestly think it's probably pretty close to how things happened, because the people who are saying that it's not accurate are, like, our own government, you know, like the CIA saying, oh no, it was never like that, you know, and they're just kind of upset that things that they actually did, you know, waterboarding and torturing, without trying to get too political, that they did are being depicted on a huge screen. You know, it's just, it's really, it's, it affects you.
Yeah, totally. It's just them trying to sweep some stuff under the rug that they don't want the public to know about, I'd guess, you know? Yeah. But, so that's kind of all for our movie section right now. We'll definitely do more on movies when we have our own movie dedicated podcast. Moving on, I think we're going to go ahead and touch on the PS4. It's unconfirmed, but a few little things have been leaked out about it. It sounds like it's going to be pretty awesome. Right now, the code name or code word for it is Orbis. Ooh, and if you guys know anything, you know the new Xbox was codenamed Durango, and so it's something to keep your eye open for. We'll see what happens. It's just kind of interesting that it finally got leaked.
Yeah. I've read a few news stories, like, about the controller having some biometric screens on it and things like that, but I think that's just kind of a gimmick, and it all, like, boils down to solid gameplay and good games.
It's the game library. Delivery.
Yeah. You know.
So you guys keep your eyes open, ears peeled, you know. Sony has also announced a white PlayStation 3 bundle. It's coming out on January 27th. If you're anything like me, I love me some white PlayStations. I don't know if I'll get this one because I just bought a new PlayStation or just had a new PlayStation gifted to me.
Yeah.
But it's going to cost you $299.99. It's 500 gigabytes, the Super Slim, and you get a year subscription to PlayStation Plus. So it's not such a bad deal. So, you know, if you've been waiting to buy a new PlayStation, now might be your chance.
Yeah. I'm a PlayStation Plus member subscriber right now, and I've been trying to bug you for months to try and get it. I think it's really awesome. Like, you get a bunch of free games. Like, I got The Walking Dead, which is an awesome, awesome game, just given to me for having the subscription. I mean, the Scott Pilgrim vs. the World game, which is kind of more of a throwback classic arcade side-scroller. Just, I mean, it's really worth it. I mean, you pay as much as the Xbox Live yearly subscription, and you get free games.
Yeah, so, I think I'm gonna have to hop on that. It seems worth it.
Plus you get the 1 gigabyte, I think, it don't quote me on the actual amount, but that you get, but you get the cloud storage service, which was really awesome. It makes it so you can take save files over to your friends' houses. It makes it like me, I've had a PS3 die on me, and so I've been selecting a few select save files, you know, my Skyrim save and things like that, to my cloud storage, so that in case my PS3 does die on me, then I don't have a tragic scenario when my last PS3 die, I lose all my save files to like Final Fantasy IX and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's definitely probably worth the investment. I just need to hop on that, you know what I mean? Just always sandbagging stuff. For you Final Fantasy fans, Lightning Return has been announced. You know, it's pretty much Final Fantasy 13-3. I haven't gotten around to playing 13-2 yet. I beat 13 literally the day that I bought it. I don't know. Lightning, I guess, didn't really interest me all that much. She's an okay main character in my eyes, but it looks really interesting, though. It's supposed to sort of be like Orkiana of Time a little bit, where you have to be in certain places at certain times in order to perform your missions. And as if you're there early in the morning in a town, as it gets closer to afternoon, the town gets busier and people come alive. And it's kind of a cool little treat that they're doing there. It's interesting. I don't know if I'll get it and play it or not. I'm kind of burnt out with Square doing a bunch of sequels to one game. It's a bit of a bummer.
I completely agree. I think, while I hold all those Final Fantasy games so close, I think it peaked with 10. I played 11, which is the online one, quite a bit, and I'm really excited for the re-release of 14 2.0, but, like, I got mostly through 13, kind of gave up on it, because, like, there was characters in there who I just couldn't, like, Snow the character, just, ugh.
And Hope, not was just kind of...
Yeah, exactly, and...
So, yeah, I don't know, I just, like you said, I think it peaked with 10.
Yeah, when you play those kind of games, you really have to be invested in the characters because you play them for like 100 hours, you know, and, you know. The Batman Arkham Universe domain was registered by Warner Brothers. Now, if you're anything like me, you've played the last two Batman games start to finish because they're some of the best games out there. Every superhero game now is kind of being molded after it because it's such a successful formula. The URL suggests that the next project could be called, like, there's a bunch of different names. Arkham Universe, Arkham Arises, Arkham Begins, Arkham Legends, Arkham's Origins, Arkham Stories. So, you know, I mean, just basically, it's kind of semi-confirming that they're working on Arkham whatever you want to call it, 3. Which is, I mean, hey man, we were just talking about how we don't like sequels for the Final Fantasy games. Bring on, like, as many sequels as they can milk out of those Batman games.
As long as they keep being good, that's what matters, yeah. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so what do you think about the Lance Armstrong deal that's going on right now?
Well, like, I mean, he just admitted to what we all know. Like, and I actually never watched the interview with Oprah because I just don't care, you know?
Yeah, me either.
You know, like, cycling is the dirtiest sport out of all the sports. Everybody dopes.
Yeah,
everybody.
It's kind of funny because I think the guy that came in second place almost every year that Lance won was also banned because they were using steroids. So to me, not a big deal. My perception of the guy isn't going to change. He's still a pretty good dude. You know, he had his testicular cancer, did his thing, and I really don't care. Cycling's not that big of a sport to me, but...
Yeah, I can think, like, all the good that he's done for cancer research, I don't care. The thing that I don't like about this story is that he's destroyed families' lives. When they came out and said, no, he's a doper and he uses drugs, he, like, used his influence with his company and everything to destroy them.
Right.
And, you know, sue them with lawsuits that were millions and millions of dollars and bankrupted them, all because... he said they were lying, but it really came out that they're in the truth.
Yeah.
Now, he's never going to go back.
Yeah, real negative.
He's never going to go back and fix those families' lives, which sucks, but, you know, what can you do? I mean...
Okay, what do you think about Mr. Manti Te'ao and his online leukemia-ridden, stricken girlfriend?
That he never met. It's just... I mean, he's had care... we're not going to really talk about it, but he has character concerns before this, and the whole reason he went to Notre Dame is because of a character concern. He was supposed to go to USC and he didn't, so now that this comes out, like, is he just a crazy person?
I think he has psychotic issues or something. Yeah, I mean, because, there's no way he didn't realize what was going on. I mean, he's buddies with the dude that did it, you know, that supposedly made the fake thing.
Are you telling me that the most successful famous football player on the Notre Dame football team can't get a girlfriend at Notre Dame?
Yeah, he has to get a girlfriend all the way in California who he's never met and only talked to on the phone, and she dies the same day that his grandma does. I mean,
yep.
If there's smoke, and there's
then
fire.
And then he doesn't go to the funeral?
Yeah, and his dad said that they've met each other before, but then Teo says he's never seen her except, like, once, and I don't know. It's all bogus, if you ask me.
Yeah, he just did it to get publicity for the Heisman.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally.
Which is, like, how big of an ego do you have to do that kind of thing?
Yeah, your university is supposed to back you, not a fake girlfriend.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you got Michael Crabtree out there raping women or whatever, you know, whatever he's doing.
He's being investigated in a sexual assault charge that happened last week at a hotel. He hasn't been officially charged with anything, but... I just don't get what he's doing, but hey, you know, whatever.
Yeah, hey, it might help us Seahawks fan if, you know, something ends up happening, but I guess we'll find out as more in that story gets revealed.
Yeah, speaking of the Seahawks, we did lose a member of the Seahawks family, Gus Bradley. He is now the head coach of Jacksonville Jaguars.
So we wish you luck, Mr. Gus. You did a great job here in Seattle, and we wish you all the best, and you got one heck of a job in front of you.
Yeah, we were just talking about how some people don't like our coordinators, but obviously he proved himself. He was actually, I heard this deep internet rumor, he was the Eagles head coach until Chip Kelly came back and
said, hey, I want the job.
Yeah, I want the job. So, you know, then he had to take his second option, which was Jacksonville. So, you know, I wish him all the luck. I'm not going to become a Jacksonville Jaguars fan, but I may look into him a little bit more than I do the average NFL team just to see, you know.
For sure. And he's getting replaced by Dan Quinn. He was a defensive line coach for the Seahawks a while ago, and then he went down to Florida, was defensive coordinator down in Florida in the swamp with Will Muschamp, and he's coming back, so it's not like we're losing a whole lot. We got a guy that knows the system. He's coming in, not too much is going to change, keeps it the same for the players, and, you know, it's as pretty much as good as a hire as we could get, I think, and I think he's hungry and ready to move up.
Some people said our defensive line played the best underneath him, so, you know,
that's what we need is defensive line help. We also lost another member of the Seahawks family, John Idzik. He was our front office guy. He did a lot of managing the salary cap, and he's gone now. He went to the Jets, and he's the Jets GM, so we wish him luck also.
Yeah, I mean, that's an even bigger job to me than Jacksonville. Like, I mean, not bigger like as in better, but bigger as in you've got a lot of work
ahead of you. Yeah, he's a ton of work cut out for him, so we wish him the best.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to just backtrack just a little bit back to Jacksonville. Do you think that there's any chance that we might be able to unload Matt Flynn in a trade with Jacksonville now that we kind of have a semi-in over there?
I don't know. I think fans are definitely overly optimistic.
With the trade possibilities.
With the trade possibilities, or I guess the sum that we get from trading Matt Flynn.
I've seen people saying, "Yeah, we'll get a first round draft."
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get a first. I don't think we're going to get a second. I think the best we can hope for is maybe a third if we're lucky, but even that's stretching it to me. I think our best bet is to just swap picks, like swap second round picks or something of the sort. And I think that's our best hope, but I don't think it really increases our chances. If we're going to unload Flynn, we're going to do it, and if not, we're going to keep him. But it's something to keep your eye on. Schneider is definitely looking to get rid of him, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I want to add one thing to it. I think maybe draft day, when that comes around, we might be able to package him in like a, especially if it's a team that needs a stopgap at quarterback, say, we'll just keep talking about Jacksonville. I'm not exactly sure when Jacksonville drafts. It's going to be in the top 15. I know that. Oh, then no way we can't trade up with that. Never mind.
Yeah, it's not happening. There's nothing in the first round, and I doubt the second round even. We're 25, they're 2. There's nothing that's going to happen, I don't think. So,
yeah.
Well, you can always cross your fingers there, Seahawks fans. You just never know.
Yep.
But this has been A to Z Podcast. If you guys have any questions you want answered or you want to let us know anything, you can email us at A2ZPODCAST@gmail.com. Once again, that's A2ZPodcast@gmail.com.
Most of the episodes are going to be more like this. Our last one was just under 2 hours, and that was just because it was the first one. Most of them we're going to try and shoot probably just under an hour, and hope you enjoyed it.
Yep. Thanks for listening, guys. I'm A.
And I'm Z.
And we'll talk to you guys later.
See ya.